Hi, this is Andy Powell of Wishbone Ash, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
You're listening to Cat Tales.
Hi, you're listening to Cat Tales, and I'm Cat. Wishbone Ash are the musicians' musicians, and original and founding member Andy Powell is happy with that. With over 50 years and more albums than Andy can recall under its belt, Wishbone Ash is still going strong, despite seeing more than 20 band members go through the exit door and surviving an acrimonious court case. There may have been a few lows along the way, but there have certainly been far more highs as Andy and the band embark on a major tour with the excitement about playing the band's newest album, Coat of Arms, and 2022 marking the 50th anniversary of their critically acclaimed album, Argus. We chat about the secret behind the band's longevity, pioneering their signature twin lead guitar style, what makes a good song, and how nostalgia is the future. This is The One with Andy Powell. Thank you, Andy, for agreeing to talk to me today. I really do appreciate it. We've got lots of people who are dying to hear what you've got to say. And I just wanted to maybe start the conversation with where you are now, because I've looked at your website and you're touring immediately, as of tomorrow, I see. So we're right in the thick of it. That must be brilliant.
Yeah, well, it is brilliant. Yeah, I mean, we managed to squeeze in a tour of the UK in October, which was amazing. One of our party got COVID, but we managed to soldier on with a replacement, and we completed the tour, which was a month long, which was the start of it. Then, of course, Omicron came down, and we were due to go to Germany, and they said, "Nein, we're not going. We couldn't go there." But then we're on this 45-date U.S. tour, which is extreme, and we're heading out to Davenport, Iowa tomorrow, where actually they've been having a lot of tornado action. We're hoping we're going to miss that.
Just a bit.
So, you know, it's always extreme in the US. But we do love touring here. We've got friends all over and fans. And so far, we're about, I think, 9 days into it. And the numbers have just been exceptional. In fact, really just blasted through anything that we thought we would be getting at concerts, because you know you have to expect a certain percentage of no shows due to COVID. Yeah. But we've not been having that. It's been sold out shows, so
wow.
We're pretty amazed by that.
What, everybody's up for it now, though, aren't they? They've had enough of everything that's going on.
Yeah,
you know, we've got all this Russian Ukraine situation as well. People actually,
it's so sad.
It's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. You know, people want to be uplifted. And I'm mindful of what's going on, obviously, but we're kind of ready to say goodbye to COVID, aren't we, and get back our lives.
Yeah, it's been exhausting. And but, you know, nothing like as exhausting as what the people in Ukraine are suffering. I mean, we've been there, of course, many times. We've been to Russia many times, and both before Glasnost and after. And, you know, that's one of the things with musicians. We go to places that even politicians don't go, and we're kind of like feet on the ground. We see life, and we have friends there in these places, and we you know, a band like Wishbone Ash that's been around for over 50 years, we have a community that we've fostered, especially in the since the beginning of the internet age in early 90s. You know, we were one of the first bands to get that going. So, you know, that's how we really run our business, our work, our concerts, is through the internet and social media. So we hear it all. You know, we get, you know, you mentioned COVID. I mean, a lot of our fans are frontline workers.
Yes.
And I get personal stories from them. We get fan mail from Soviet Union, from Ukraine. Mm. You know, we've been there loads of times, you know. So it's heavy, you know, it's visceral.
Mm,
yeah.
It must be very personal as well for you, you know, because actually,
having
50 years in the business like you have, you can't avoid making friends of the people who are following you and who are fans of your music, because it's a community, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, in the early days, you were kind of cosseted and cushioned and kept almost away from the fans, because it was a different business then, but now it's far more up close and personal. And And it's, you know, some of the fans have got just wonderful stories. And so you end up with this network of friends all around the world. That's just one of the amazing things about being in the music game. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, people are ready to be uplifted. And I think music, no matter what the times are, it's just a wonderful, brings people together. And, you know, there's nostalgia involved. Obviously, there's just the joy of listening to people playing music live in a live setting, because, you know, increasingly more and more things are online. Things are kind of enjoyed, how can you say, you know, from a distance in a way. I mean, the social networking and stuff, it actually has an ironic effect, is that people don't leave their homes so much, you know.
Yeah,
but
true.
We find that our fans, you know, they do like to come out and enjoy the experience. And so, you know, I've been getting personally a massive charge from it, you know. And even though I myself had COVID just before we left.
Did you?
And I got over that.
My.
So that left me a little bit. Left me a little bit weakened, but the charge I get from playing live is nothing like it.
Well, there isn't, and I think everybody who I speak to says the same thing. I mean, I know the industry's changed so much and people are now reliant
yes.
far more on the live industry than they are the recorded material, aren't they? It's done a complete flip,
totally.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
But there is something special
yeah.
about that connection with your audience, isn't there? Seeing the whites of their eyes, well, the ones in the front row anyway.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, and many bands do meet and greets now, and, you know, they get to mingle with the fans and they get to talk and share stories. And we're not doing it just right now because of COVID concerns, but that's typically what we will do. And, you know, we even have a dedicated person that keeps all those kind of synapse gaps, if you want to call them that, going, you know, making sure that we get to see online mail and that kind of thing. So, yeah. It's you know what happens is, I mean, if you've been in the game this long as I have, it's your whole life, and there's no the barriers have come down, and there it's just what you do, who you are, and where you go. So you know, you're always in a state of flux. You're always touring, and you know, obviously we do have a lot of time where we have private time, we're at home, but. It, you know, you make the road, as you just said, you make it work for you instead of fighting it. But I think there was a lot of that in the old days with bands. They wrecking hotel rooms
yeah.
and just not realizing the privilege that it is to be in music. And we don't take anything for granted. And none of the guys in the band do.
Mm-hmm.
It's our life, you know.
Yeah.
And so why would you want to trash your life? You
oh,
know?
Absolutely. But you see, that comes with age, doesn't it? That's wisdom, you see. What you're talking to me
yes,
there is fully wisdom. You know, it's complete wisdom, isn't it? From, you know, when you're in your 20s, you I don't know, it came so quick as well, doesn't it, for a lot of people. And in a way it did for you because, you know, having... You answered an advert. I was talking to Steve Hackett. He did the same thing. I mean, it was incredible to think now.
It is,
yeah.
I know Steve, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I think it was Melody Maker as well, you know. Obviously, very influential in its day, wasn't it? But you could never have that now,
absolutely.
Could you? It's a completely different world.
No. You know, and he's somebody that I know embraces that ethos, you know. And we actually share same... road crew actually on different, when he's not working. Well, and so you know, there's a kind of there's a camaraderie there, and yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a completely different thing now. You know, you've just got. I mean, everybody is a, you know, with respect, everybody is a writer or a podcaster or a photographer or there's no barriers anymore, and so you know, you have to be mindful of that. You're not, you're always on display, or you're always working, really, you know, that's the kind of thing. But which is cool. It's kind of, it's on the one hand, it's casual, you know, but on the other hand, you know, people get the idea that it's a profession too,
oh.
you know. mostly. Oh. Sometimes you, you run up against problems.
Yeah, but you want a bit of fun along the way as well, don't you? And you know, you're echoing exactly. I mean, I don't mean to name drop here, seriously, but it just echoes the conversation I had just with oh crikey, who was I talking to just recently? And he was saying exactly the same thing about all the different podcasters. What, you know, who do you choose to do an interview with? Oh, it was Rick Wakeman, that was it. And he was saying the same thing, that the internet's been great for opening a world up, but at the same time, and this is true of music, isn't it? You get so much out there. How do you actually choose what's good and bad, and how do you actually decide on what to listen to now? It's opportunity, but it's in the same way, it's, you know what I mean? It's muddied the water.
yeah. Absolutely. We were only talking about this last night, that we surfed like a surfeit of riches. You know, you've just got, you know, if you tune into one artist, you can kind of check them out on so many different levels, you know, Google, YouTube, Wikipedia, but you know, you can go any which way and find out absolutely anything you want about that particular artist. It might be some esoteric person up in the wilds of Nova Scotia who's producing amazing music, and it's on the same level as you mentioned some of these other artists that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And so we're all, you know, even, you know, established artists like us that have been through the music business as it was, with A&R men, producers, we're on the same level playing field now as somebody who's working in their bedroom.
Yes, exactly.
Producing music. And we that kind of can be a bit irksome, yeah, you know, but at the same time, you just have to accept it, that some of these people are as talented as you, if not more, and you have to accept how they're producing music. And, And operate in that on that playing field, you know, and that's kind of humbling in one way, and it's enlightening in others. So, you know, it's all good.
Driving into Delaware, dealing with the daily grind. Troubled mind. This bridge is a memorial to the victims of a war. She and I, you survived, but I can't take it anymore. I feel like walking out the door. Up in the sky I see a sign. Are you in crisis? Call this line. ocean. Yes, I'll surely make that call. Strange what is needed these days to bring our thoughts around. But it pulls me to my senses. I am lost, could I be found? Yeah. Guess I'll turn this car around. Up in the sky I see a sign. Are you in crisis? Call this line. We can ease your troubled mind. It takes a little of your time. Up in the sky I see the sign. Are you in crisis? Call this line. We can ease your troubled mind.
Hi, this is Andy Powell of Wishbone Ash, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
Yeah, you know, you're so right. But at the end of the day, Andy, let's think about this. You've been in the business for over 50 years. You know, Wishbone Ash were formed back in the 70s. Now, you don't keep going that length of time without some kind of magic. You know, what do you think the secret of your longevity has been?
That's a good question. Well, first and foremost, it's the musical identity. I mean, the thing about a band that came up in the early 70s was the competition was intense. So if you think about the rock bands of the early 70s, each one of them had a very distinct identity. So if you were Jethro Tull or Deep Purple or Wishbone Ash or even slightly before that, you know, you had bands like Zeppelin was as different from Cream as Cream was as different from, say, Jethro Tull. So, you know, our thing obviously was the twin lead guitar style, and we pioneered that. We probably did more with that format than any other band, and so we were smart and lucky that we got this musical identity right from the get go. So, you know, we've only ever had to build on that and utilize that. And it's just stood us in just great stead, you know. Plus, I mean, obviously, you know, when I got into this band, when we formed the band, there was an incredible, how can I put it? We used to have this phrase about making it, you know, and we gave ourselves certain time frames to make it, quote unquote. And we just dedicated our lives to it. You know, and there was an extreme amount of positivity. We would read books on it. We had an incredible manager, Miles Copeland. He had the same ethos, you know, we've got to make it, you know, whether it's in monetary terms or breaking America or getting a number one album, or headlining the marquee, whatever it was, or Wembley. Everything was done to the, you sacrificed your life absolutely to it. And that's something that not many people are prepared to do. when you go into something, you decide to become a professional and you decide to dedicate your life to music, it becomes something, wow, it's powerful. That's what I can tell you.
Yeah, that's incredible hearing you talk there, Andy. I mean, it's amazing. It sounds to me like it's almost all-consuming and almost like a need for you to, you know, to follow that path. And once you're on it, you know, you can't get off it. You know, you're either in love with it or you're not.
Well, yeah, it can be destructive.
Yes.
But, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I also at the same time had the energy and the capacity to have a family, so that kept me grounded, and they've just been incredibly accommodating to my life. So, you know, it worked out for me. Other people, if you sell your soul to music, sometimes it can be very scary.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a Faustian pact. You know, you can, everything else in your life just falls apart. You know?
Yeah.
But I was lucky. I had a good education, and I was able, like some of the people you just mentioned, we managed to navigate our way through it. You know, bankruptcies, disasters, all kinds of issues, and then you go, oh yeah, that's quite a life. You know?
Yeah, you look back and you think, wow, what a ride. But it's not over yet, Andy. This is the thing, isn't it? And you mentioned there about, you know, it's almost like a business, isn't it? Well, it is a business, not almost. It is a business, the music industry.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And
yeah.
What you've described is a fabulous, almost like a roadmap to success that you were working out there with your fellow colleagues and band members and, you know, the management at the time. And that must have really come from within, because, of course, before you joined the band, you had already got a career path already mapped out in a way, hadn't you, for management? So those skills must have been very, very useful for you.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I was playing music out live as a kid, as a teenager, you know, from about the age of 14. So you mention it in terms of being a business. I mean, even at 14 and 15, playing in social clubs, playing at local cinemas, there was always this concept in the bands that I was in, and I was often the youngest member of a band. So, you know, I might be playing with kids that were 18. And we all, you know, we're post-war kids. We always had the idea that we were, in our minds, we were professionals. Yeah, you know, we might be playing, you know, the Ovaltine social club show, or we might be playing a youth club. But there was always this concept, you know, you go on stage, you play a couple of sets, and somebody pays you a fiver. So that's the beginning of the way that you look at what you do. And I mean, I've given talks in music colleges and things, and I mean, these days kids come of age a lot later than what we did. We were young men and women going out there, and we treated life seriously, because don't forget, post-war Britain was being built up. You know, if you saw an opportunity, you took it.
Yeah.
So that all built into the mix of when we finally, you know, I went truly professional. And I tried a couple of other things first, of course, you know, but I realized that music was the calling. I'd already had this incredible grounding of being, you know, hustling, running up to London in vans, you know, hustling gear into gigs and coming home at 3-4 in the morning, making a little bit of money and going on to the next weekend or, you know, whatever, plus working other jobs as well. So work ethic was massive for me. It still is. I'm addicted to work. So I think a lot of musicians that certainly Hackett and people like that, they have the same ethos. You know, it's like, it's what drives you. So, you know, all that plays into it.
Well, it does. And I think it's fascinating to look back on your youth and your early days and how it does mould you into a person, doesn't it? And what you're describing there in terms of, like, you know, post-war Europe and rebuilding. And it was a time of that, wasn't it? The 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and even, you know, sort of like the late 70s were still the same, to be honest, looking back. But we didn't appreciate it,
did we,
at the time?
Totally. I mean, have you ever looked at, if you look at photographs of bands from, say, the 60s, we're all small. We're like tiny men, yes. Tiny men and women. And you know, because we were basically malnourished. You know, I mean, you look at guys and ladies in bands now, and I mean, they're strapping, big, you know, Adonis-like figures. If you look at like the Rolling Stones, you know, skinny little men, malnourished. I mean, we were all like that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good observation.
it's one of the funniest things I often think about. You know, like I mean, you know, diet. I've watched everything expand and explode. I mean, diet was terrible. There were no, when we first started touring, there were no motorways in Britain. There were no service centers. You know, I mean, if you wanted food on the road, it was like a lorry driver's caravan on the side of the road. You get a cup of tea and a bacon sandwich. It's like heaven. Yeah. You know?
Oh, it's amazing though. But you see, rationing didn't even stop till 1955, did it? People forget that actually it was a long time after the war.
That's exactly right.
You know, before it all sort of came back. Yeah. And that must have formed your, you know, your sort of like your character and made you far more resilient than, as you quite rightly say, I think, you know, people today grow up a lot later, don't they? And that's great for them, isn't it? But that's possibly what's given you your longevity in the music industry, I would say.
I think you're right, yeah. Getting back to your initial question, there's a feeling of thankfulness and respect because, I mean, I remember when we first started touring Germany, which was only a few years after the war, in the early 70s, and it was kind of scary, actually, because they had been our enemy, you know, and there we were, these people, that young kids that hadn't actually fought in the war, playing to young audiences that hadn't been through the war themselves, and there was this feeling like we're building a new thing through music and Europe, and then of course the EU came on. Well, we know that story, but you know, and there was a wonderful feeling of we could start afresh here, and there's something here other than politics, other than this and that, and so you know, especially British bands. I mean, we were very. As a group, we were very successful in that period of time and could go to these places, could be almost like emissaries, you know. I mean, it's kind of cool. And that laid the groundwork for now, you know, what we do now.
Absolutely. No, I get it completely. I really do. And that sound that was so different, as you were quite rightly alluding to, with the twin lead, you know, guitar and the whole sort of like style that you, that Wishbone Ash sort of like, you know, pioneered really, didn't you? And I just, what I was sort of going through my mind as I was imagining the early days of this, because it was a new sort of concept, was there a bit of a rivalry between the two guitarists, yourself and Ted Turner at the time? I mean, I can imagine that, you know, both of you wanting to be there at the lead and it's me. Were egos at bay there? I mean, did it cause problems?
Well, guitarists are notably there's quite a bit of ego involved in guitar, and there is a, it can be competition. In our case,
you may say that, Andy, but I couldn't possibly comment, you see. Yeah, sorry, go on. You can
well,
say.
You know, the funny thing is that, you know, I think we had our eye on the bigger picture, and we, you know, the band's sound was more important than any one individual. And I think it was only when one individual or another might have got ideas of being superior or whatever, that things started to change within the lineup of the band. I mean, I have to say, when we started, it was all for one for all. And, you know, I mean, we were starving for a start. So it was like you're dependent on each other. You're going to want to get a meal at the end of the day. But no, Ted and I, we had a marvelous relationship, actually. He knew exactly the parts he would tackle, and I knew the parts that I would tackle. And between us, there was never any competition, as far as I'm aware. I think you'd probably say the same if you interviewed him. So I think we just had our eye on a bigger prize than our individual needs, you know?
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about, being a part of a band, isn't it, really? It is a family at the end of the day. You have to be that close, don't you, to succeed?
Bands are great. Bands are great. I love being in bands, you know what I mean? Been many different people through the ranks of this band, but I always strive to create that family atmosphere Because let's face it, you're on the road an awful lot, and you're kind of like you're eating meals with each other, you're traveling together, and music only forms a small part of the day. So you better be getting on well. And I just love the whole idea of a band. I sort of often liken it to a little military unit, a platoon or something that goes around. We foster a kind of team spirit. And it's like a football team, anything. It's just great to work with a collective of people. Yeah. Fantastic.
Oh, I can well imagine. I can. So looking back to your early days then, I'm just thinking now, you've had 50 years in the career. You're looking back at your early albums, for example. Can you see how you've developed over that time? Do you still recognise yourself? I mean, your style's obviously moved with you, hasn't it? Can you still recognise the early you in those albums?
I can, but when I listen to those albums, I mean, they were made in the last century, so the first four albums, there's a sound to the albums where you can go, well, everything was analog, and there's a kind of a, it's almost like listening to a jazz record from the 40s or 50s. You go, that's a different sound kind of recording, there's something, but as you say, you totally can recognize your own style. Within it, your voice might be a bit higher. Mm-hmm. your guitar playing might be a little bit faster, more frenetic. But on the whole, generally so. I mean, and, just touching back on your earlier question about the ingredients that have given us longevity, I think that people that follow the band, they know that we're a player's band. I mean, in fact, other musicians... it's a wonderful thing when you've got the respect of players in other bands and they go, oh yeah, Wishbone Ash, that's a player's band. I don't really know what their latest album is, but I know that if I go and see them, I'll see some really good guitar playing and a great band working at the peak of it. So there's always that thing that you can fall back on, as well as say the band's sound or the fact that he had a hit record or something like that. And that also gives me a massive amount of pleasure, because I always feel like I'm a work in progress. I always feel like I'm learning. And I think that any musician, that's still producing work will feel the same way. In fact, that's a massive part of it, because you always feel like I haven't done my best work yet. So I think that even, someone long in the tooth, as far as producing albums, I mean, we produced... over, I think, 30 studio albums and many other types of recordings. And I think you're always going, hey, I think I can do a better album for the next one or something like that.
Well, that's the drive that keeps you going, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you're driven, basically, by that. And that's healthy, actually. I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm not ready to just sit back and... I'm not looking for a number one. I'm looking for just bettering myself or widening my range or, I became more of a vocalist, for example, in recent years, much more so than in the early years. And I work on that. I love doing that. I love the release of singing. I'm always looking for the kind of personal reward that brings, it's a real healthy thing to feel and to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love it. I love every as you can probably tell, I love all the aspects
absolutely.
Of it. It's my passion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, you've carried on that sound, that signature sound of yours with the twin guitars, etc., all the way through to your latest album, Coat of Arms, that was released a couple of years ago. You can still hear that same kind of formula, can't you? And just like you're saying there, that if people haven't heard that album and they come to your shows, they will know what to expect and know it's going to be bloody good.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's what we hope, that's what we aspire to. And, very proud of the last album. We released it, and then, of course, we had COVID, so we weren't able to promote it quite as much as we wanted to. But we're playing songs from it on stage now. We're also obviously playing the classics that we're known for, particularly from the Argus album. We're doing in the autumn when we tour the UK, we're actually celebrating the 50th anniversary of the release of that classic album. So we'll be playing the whole album live on stage.
Superb.
And yeah, so, you know, we there'll be a mixture of old and new songs. But I mean, yeah, so, you know, if you come to a show, you'll get a kind of an overview of everything that we are, really. Yeah, we sort of be quite happy to be doing that, actually. Hi, this is Andy Powell of Wishbone Ash, and you're listening to Cat Tales. One of the things I've during COVID that I branched into personally was I joined this platform called Patreon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our audience are our patrons. You know, we couldn't go out there and work if we weren't patronized by our audience and supported. So what I did was just to keep in contact, as we talked about earlier, I joined this platform where I I provide content, video content, which can involve the band or it can involve me. It's my thoughts and really just an extension of what we're doing right now. Just if I can impart any kind of advice, information. So a lot of my members are musicians or just interested parties in music and that kind of thing. And it's it's called patreon.com.
Yeah.
/Andy Powell. And so I did that, and it's been actually a lifesaver for me, because it's just kept that contact going and kept me focused on music when we weren't actually able to get out there on the road and do it. So, you know, that's something that I would mention. And of course the new album, I mean, if you missed out on it, it's still new. I think you might be pleasantly surprised by the style and the quality. You can hear all the kind of links back to the early style, but you can hear some great fresh songs, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got it all out there in a beautiful vinyl edition with a photo booklet and everything that looks really scrummy as a nice little, you know, a collector's piece as well. It looks amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, some nice talking on along those lines as well, I must mention that we had the definitive box set that was released a couple of years ago, a limited thing that was over 30 CDs of retrospective. But we've got a couple of other things in the pipeline. We have a beautiful coffee table book coming out. I think that's in 2023, which will be, back in the day, all these fabulous rock photographers have libraries full of material that's never seen the light of day. So that's going to be beautiful, glossy package that's being produced for people, limited edition stuff. And then we've got a 10 vinyl album package of live material that's never been released. We then have that's coming out as a limited edition. Then we have all these projects are on the go at the moment, which is amazing. Through Snapper Records, which is Snapper Music in the UK, they do an amazing job of archiving and finding out finding these recordings on bands like us. And so we have that. We also have finally, after decades of trying with the BBC, they've actually agreed to license all of our live recordings.
Oh, wonderful.
That we did, and some of those are absolutely excellent. So there's like this plethora of material that's, it's been in the archives and it's gradually coming out and seeing the light of day. And so those projects, they'll come out over the next 2 or 3 years. And, you know, for those really diehard completist collectors, there's this kind of material on the band. And so, you know, bit by bit, everything that was hidden is being, you know, exposed and is coming out and beautifully packaged, as you mentioned. So I'm really happy about that. So that's the backstory to what we do in the current time. You know, we're out recording, playing, but then there's this sort of support coming from the band's earlier career, which is lovely. I feel like absolutely overjoyed by that.
I can imagine, and I must be. It must be absolutely wonderful for you to go and have a look at all that as well, because there must be things in there that you've long forgotten, and it brings back all these memories of that fabulous career that we've been talking about. And you think, do you know what? Wow, that's just, it's just lovely to have it for yourself as much as for the fans, isn't it?
Well, it really is. It really is. I mean, I'll tell you a quick little story. We were up in Calgary in Canada a couple of years ago, and just before lockdown, and they have a kind of rock and roll hall of fame up there, and they got word that we were in town, and we went by and had a look at all the exhibits, and obviously featured a lot of Canadian artists and fabulous museum. And the curator there said, hey, I've got something that might interest you. He said, I know you did an album in the 70s called Live Dates, and I know that you used the Rolling Stones mobile truck, didn't you? I said, yeah. I said, there weren't many live albums made in rock in those days. And, he said, we've got the truck. I said, what? He said, yeah, we've got the Rolling Stones mobile. And he said, would you like to have a look at it? We haven't got it on display yet. But we acquired it. He says it's done, I think he said it had done 2 million miles. And They had acquired it from Moscow, of all places. That's where it was. It ended up there.
Wow.
And I walked in this truck, and we opened the door. It was like a little time capsule. Had the MCI machines there, all the kind of soundproofing on the walls and ceiling. And it was like a flashback of just, wow. Those were the days, you know, when we were recording these shows. I mean, now you take live recording, anyone can do it. You can do it on an iPhone. It won't be the best quality. But in those days, you know, there were only a few of those kind of trucks.
Yes.
And there were only a few rock bands doing really great live albums. There was, you know, The Who live at Leeds, obviously. There was the Allman Brothers live at the Fillmore. And, you know, we had our Live Days album, and that's where it was recorded on that channel. And it's just like, wow. And it's the same thing when you hear these somebody located a demo acetate of our very, very first album from 1969. And it was, yeah, it was being thrown out, ironically, again, with some Rolling Stones recordings from a studio, Olympic Studios. This is somebody who ran a fan club for us in the United States. He lives in Maui right now, actually. But he went on the internet. This is the amazing thing. And there was an auction. They said, yeah, we're auctioning this, that, and the, oh, yeah, there's a tape here from Wishbone Ash. It's the demo of their first album. Well, he snagged the album, and he got it for us, and we released it. And it's an album called Lost Pearls. And I'd absolutely forgotten that we had actually recorded the entire album, a one-shot pass through it.
Amazing.
And then we went in and redid it properly the way we really wanted to do it. But nonetheless,
oh my God,
to hear that material and those songs,
incredible.
You know, it's incredible.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How about the name, Lost
yeah.
Pearls? Isn't that perfect for what you've just found there, like a little gem?
It worked out. It was a gem, yeah. So, you know, as you say, you know, when you stumble across these things and you're so busy barreling forward all the time, yeah. And then you stop and you take a breath and you see and hear something like that, you go, wow, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to just stop you in your tracks and go, that's incredible. And there's a little time capsule again, you know, these little, and you get an insight and a glimpse into, it's another perspective on what you're doing now. And you go, we were still on the same track back then. And
absolutely.
It was still good. It was worthy.
Amazing,
you know?
Yeah. Isn't it? Well, you see, in those sort of days, lots of stuff was lost, wasn't it? Like the BBC used to re-record over their tapes, didn't they?
Yes.
And I even remember when I started out doing my show, you know, this is, you know, not quite a few years ago, actually 20-odd years ago, I did the same thing with tapes. And I've lost so many original recordings of interviews I did because it wasn't made for broadcast, you know, in those days you just did that, didn't you? You just re-recorded. So lost treasure.
Well, you didn't realise. I don't think you realised, probably any of us realised, that the impact of that period of time culturally would have this kind of value. So, yeah, it was just like, oh, it's just what I do, you know.
Yeah.
And, you record over things and it became the job of other people to actually collect and collate it and show... You, even yourself, you know, wow, that was really worthy. That was a almost cataloguing part of the culture.
Absolutely.
At that point, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Right? I mean, yeah.
Amazing.
Well, anyway, so...
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, these are the benefits, I guess, of being having a longevity in the business. You can look back and see this perspective, this vast perspective that you didn't have back
exactly.
then.
Exactly. And thank goodness that technology has moved on as well, where you can rekindle it and share it in a new format now that wasn't even in our psyche, was it? We couldn't imagine it years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're very fortunate now. You get access to everything. It's great.
Oh, I wish you so much luck with it all. I can't wait to see that coffee table book. Sounds amazing. And and hearing some of that old material would be quite a trip down memory lane. How lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, Andy, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so, so much for your time. I've really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I really have. So I do wish you all the best with all the stuff we've talked about. And I thank you sincerely for actually being on the show. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, Kat. And, maybe we'll meet up at some point. And I wish you all the best with your podcast. It sounds as if you've already got an incredible audience. So good luck.
Bless
with
you.
It.
Thank you.
Fabulous.
Thank you for listening to Cattails with me, Cat, and my guest today, Andy Powell. The tracks featured are Blowing Free from Argus, In Crisis from Power of Eternity, and We Stand as One from Coat of Arms. Visit wishboneash.com for more information about Andy and Wishbone Ash, where to purchase their music, and when and where they will be performing live. To listen to this again and to other tales, visit cattails.co.uk.
You've been listening to